When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast in the wake of a glorious, magical FA Cup weekend. We're joined on the show this week by a man I'm sure who is familiar to many of you. Can I call you a stalwart of Tottenham Twitter, Adam?
Yeah, I think I've been on there since 2010, so I've paid my dues, I think.
He's the artist who also formerly featured on the Tottenham Way podcast, so many of you may have listened to that. But yeah, it's Adam Nathan. Hello Adam, welcome to the show. How are you doing, mate?
I'm well, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming on. We've spoken quite a lot over the years. And I think we used to beef quite a bit back in the day when we were young rutting stags, you know. I think nowadays we're just old and a bit too jaded to be asked of any of that, aren't we, mate? But how are you, just to get a kind of idea of where you're feeling, how are you feeling anyway, at least, with regards to Tottenham? How is everything for you right now?
I did a show last week with Spooky, and I think I said, and this is probably going to be my view for the whole season, if Arsenal didn't exist, I'd probably be able to enjoy this season and the rest of it so much more than I currently am, because we all know there's a massive building job that needs to be done. I am fairly content that the people in place, certainly managerial-wise, are there to oversee it. And if we could just watch the games, try and win, maybe scrape into Europe, that'd be so great. But then Arsenal have come along with this just incredibly annoying everything, and I've now got that urge more than ever to want to finish above them. So I'm kind of having my pragmatism very much challenged by the fact that every point matters so much just to try and stay above them, because I just can't be bothered for the bullshit if they finish above us.
It's funny because I've seen like an array of answers on this subject, but are they back for you? I mean, we're not talking like Invincibles back, but top four contenders, are they back in that conversation now, do you think?
I don't think so. I think Arteta is one of the most performative frauds I've ever seen. And actually, a mate of mine mentioned that since Conte turned up, he thinks Arteta's been much more demonstrative on the sidelines. Started to use the same words like suffering and things like that, like just little bits, as if he almost feels quite intimidated by a much bigger dog being on the same patch. So, Arteta does strike me as one of the worst people to ever grace the face of the earth.
He doesn't look like a nice man, does he?
No, and even like taking off the left back after half an hour yesterday, like, all right, mate, we get it. Like, I mean, it's a complete pretend club anyway. Like, no one actually supports Arsenal. You support like a brand, and it's all kind of, you know, who can shout the loudest, isn't it? So, and he just fits in with that so well.
Would you have been concerned about them if they'd have gotten, I don't know, say a Graham Potter, for example? Where do you stand on Graham Potter? Actually, that's an interesting one.
I think he's a really good manager.
Yeah, I would have had him at Spurs.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I mean, would that have concerned you had they? Because I still have this fear that they are going to sort of wise up to Arteta. Because I say this, I'm so inconsistent on this, because I was very much like you in terms of, yeah, I think Arteta's shite, but I'm just starting to worry in a strange way that maybe he's just, I don't know, maybe the stars are just aligning in quite a good way for them, and they might, because they've got a few good young players, they still kind of, they speculate a lot, you know, and they seem to get fairly lucky of late, at least with a few other signings. I think that Gabriel lad's good, and who is it, the Japanese right-back that we were supposedly after, I think he's actually turned out to be quite a good player.
I mean, the whole back five has been bought for about 180 million, there or thereabouts, so you'd kind of expect it to be good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Ben White's decent, isn't he, as well? He's a very good player.
and the keeper's doing well, so you know they should be doing well for the money they spent. But enough.
I know, exactly. Nonsense. I know it's repulsive, isn't it? I don't know what I'm doing. I've lured you onto a Tottenham pod to get you to wax lyrical about Arsenal. We don't want to be doing that. Let's start with Morecambe. I mean, shit show at first. Well, shit show throughout. Really, we were saved by, you know, the big guns coming off the bench. It's just. I don't want to be too pearl clutchy about it because, like you say, it's a work in progress. Conte's only been here 5 minutes, but it's another kind of damning indictment of a lot of those squad players, isn't it?
It is. Although I think it's a really tough one. What? At half time, I was obviously raging, and then you sit down at the end of the game and try and think about it with a bit of rationality. And there is still a lot of me that thinks that most of those players would be okay as the 10th or 11th man in the first team.
Yeah.
And I think the problem comes with putting them all together in the same team. And I guess the evidence to confirm that would be the last 4 or 5 years when managers have consistently done that. And they never win. Now, in fairness, it used to be that players like Moura and Davies, for example, were in that second team because the first team was so much better. And, you know, you could obviously, the standard of the whole squad has dropped to a point where now some of those previous second team players are unfortunately, you know, in the first team at the moment. But it does strike me that it must be harder than we think to just throw 9 or 10 players who are out of form and out of any sort of rhythm into a team and expect them to do anything against any team, really.
Yeah, and I do think, just to sort of disagree with myself a bit, and I know it's kind of this old sort of like, you know, whatever, gammon rhetoric and stuff about the magic of the FA Cup, but I still do think that is a thing. Like a team like Morecambe coming to, you know, the new White Hart Lane or the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, as we should be calling it nowadays, apparently, it's a big deal, right? And they are going to up their game. And I actually thought Morecambe played pretty well in the first half. As much as Spurs weren't great, they were defensively sound. And we did have trouble breaking them down, which I think that's more the alarming part for me is, again, it's Spurs struggling to break a team down that sets up kind of sort of pretty turgidly defensively. I say that, but they went into the break 1-0 up, didn't they? So, I mean, yeah, they can't have been that defensive. Were there any... I mean, obviously, we'll get on to Tanguy Ndombele, who I didn't actually think had a particularly terrible performance, but were there any sort of standout figures in that team for you? If we're talking about these kind of these players who might be on the periphery of the squad, who would you let go, other than Matt Doherty, obviously?
One of my favourite phrases comes from the NFL, and there's... a manager said, you know, we never practice without our quarterback, because if we don't have our quarterback, we're fucked, and we don't practice fucked. And that is very much how I feel about Gallini. Oh. If he had to have a 6-week run in the team, like, I think he is markedly worse than a Gazzaniga, even a Vorm. And to be honest, like, you know, Morecambe played on that really well. You know, it's one ball over the top, you get a bit of, you know, miscommunication between the keeper and centre half, it goes out for a set piece and you put a decent ball in, anyone's got a chance of scoring at any level. And I think he stood out really as someone that is like, if you gave me the choice, you know, there's a long list of players you'd love to sign in January, but there is that fear that if you lose Lloris, who has had a real renaissance in the last 12 months, and I've been one of his biggest critics, that would give me huge cause for concern going forward.
It's strange, isn't it? Like, quite how just bad Gallini is, isn't it? Because it obviously adds to the urgency of getting Hugo Lloris a new contract. But again, it casts sort of a bit of doubt over what we are doing in terms of recruiting a successor for Lloris. Because Lloris can't go on forever. I mean, I know you're not his biggest fan anyway, but I'm sure you would still admit he's our number one by quite a long stretch. But there does need to be that succession plan. It probably has needed to be there for the past couple of years now, really. And it just isn't. There isn't much of a sign of it, is there? Even because I agree with you. I think Gazzaniga, he definitely wasn't good enough, but he's a far, far sight better than Gallini's proved to be. And it feels like one of those problems that Spurs kind of they don't want to address, right? It's, I'm sure you've just seen the film Don't Look Up, right? You know, the kind of the comet in the sky. This is what our kind of goalkeeping situation feels like to me at the moment, at least at Tottenham. Is there anyone you would say, I mean, do you know much in the way, are you a data guy? Do you know much in the way of any viable candidates out there?
I'm very much not, but I do remember when Cudicini was the sub goalie thinking, quite weird to have a pretty moderate to poor older foreign keeper when there must be a younger keeper in League One or League Two or the Championship that you could sign and have him progress through to be your number one. And like 13 years later, I find myself still mulling the same question and nothing has ever seemed to change. But so, you know, presumably considering they're all millionaires and billionaires running the club, they must know something that I don't. But it does seem like a strange strategy, especially in the world of homegrown players where we have a shortage, that's not a way you would target to get an easy A, succession plan, and B, extra homegrown player in your team.
Paulo Lopez. So Paulo Lopez is at Marseille now as well. So I know he was doing quite well for Roma, wasn't he, for a while? I think he was their number one. And he's, I don't know, that seemed to be like one of the first times I think I saw a sort of buy a youth team keeper to kind of, not a youth team keeper, but a kind of a young keeper to sit on the bench and perhaps take Lloris's job one day. But we just didn't seem to get that one over the line, did we? I'm not sure how strong the appetite was either way. But I remember he was one of like Pochettino's little projects, wasn't he?
But yeah, I mean, so many weird keepers. Like Cesar, do you remember him in the like 2000 in the Ramos years?
Christ, I don't know if I do actually.
The really old Spanish keeper. I think he signed from Valencia.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I do remember this guy. Cesar Sanchez.
Yeah, we just seem to have gone through just some bizarre goalkeepers.
Wow. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, mate. I'm a little bit worried about that one.
The rest of the team, I didn't think, like, Rodon got some stick for, you know, underselling Gallini once, but I mean, it's not like we've never seen Eric Dier do, you know, quite a similar thing. And I don't know what it is, but I really do think he could be a good player if he's given consistent time. I don't know why. It's just a hunch. And, you know, if Dier is out for any prolonged period, I'd much rather see him play there and Sanchez stick to the right side of the centre half trio than Tanganga, who just feels really shoehorned in at the moment and looks really low on confidence. And I certainly wouldn't trust. I'd rather that combination of Rodon middle, Sanchez on the right, than Sanchez middle, Tanganga on the right, certainly going into the next two games.
It's funny because it's funny you say that. I'm probably almost the complete opposite of Rodon. And it's one of these kind of hunches that I base on fairly little other than the few sort of the piecemeal times I've seen him appear for Spurs. I've just been like, but I just don't think he's that good. I think he looks a bit dopey and I think he looks a bit slow. But I can't really describe. I thought he was actually, he did have that moment yesterday and I sort of rolled my eyes and was just like, oh, fucking hell, here we go. But I thought he was actually all right. And he's quite a bit quicker than I thought he was actually, Rodon. And I can't disagree with you on Tanganga. And it's, I find that quite sad to see in a way, because after he'd made his kind of debut against Liverpool, I was sort of secretly hoping that Tanganga was going to be quite a good player for us, or at least, you know, a really viable, decent squad player. I mean, I know everybody got a bit excited at first and there were sort of comparisons made to Ledley King and all that type of thing, which, you know, in hindsight is a pretty bad take. But he just, it's looked ugly, hasn't it, for him? Especially at the Chelsea game. I thought he was going to burst into tears, you know, in the on the Wednesday night one. I mean, would you sort of keep hold of Tanganga, or do you sort of look to move him on? Because he seems to be one of the players that's consistently kind of put forward as somebody that might go this January.
I think he's one of those players that is not going to work in the formation that Conte seemingly wants to play. I think, in a way, and it might be revisionism, I think when the season started and Tanganga had those few really good games at the start, we all said, well, we don't need Tomiyasu because he's just a defensive right back and we've got Tanganga who can do that kind of job. That might be me kind of misrepresenting the general takes, but I do feel that we all thought that he was a decent defensive right back in a back four with a Reguilón going forward on the other side. But I don't feel that he fits either the wing back or the centre half role. And if Wednesday night taught me anything about what I can vaguely glean from Conte's motives, is this is how we're going to play, and I'm going to get players to play it. And that's why he sort of eschewed the idea of going four at the back against Chelsea, which the players he had available would suggest that's what we should have done, and he's still stuck with the five. That said to me that he is very, very structured in how he's going to play, and we're going to sign players to fit that. And I kind of feel like Tanganga, Ali, Brian Gill are the kind of players that are just never really going to work within that.
He's a funny one, Brian Gill, isn't he? Because there's obviously quite a lot of talent there, but I agree with you again. I'm just like, I don't really know where he fits. Because at first, I kind of thought he was just like a central midfielder. I hadn't really realised that he was like this kind of diminutive winger. The funny thing about Brian Gill is I feel that he's the type of player that City would sign and they could just kind of drop him in here and there and slowly develop him. And then all of a sudden, 4 years after they've signed him, Pep just starts playing him and he looks amazing. And he's just one of those kind of standard kind of City, unflashy but really solid players that just wins them a title. But yeah, I agree with you. Like you say, I don't really see a great fit for him at all. I mean, he's a very young player. I'm not really looking to sort of rush him out the door or anything. But if we did get offered all right money for him, maybe you would kind of... Because wasn't the talk already, not long ago, that I think Barca really wanted him, even though we'd only sort of signed him not long ago from Sevilla?
I'm not sure. I mean, I actually have a bit of an issue with the way... Sorry, I'm going completely off track.
No, go for it, mate.
A bit of an issue with the way he's played Son and Moura in that kind of two number 10 role behind Kane. I'm not convinced that gets the best out of either of them, whereas having two strikers with Son and Kane and one in behind, for me, seems a more natural fit. And I suppose if Gil was going to play anywhere, that semi-free role behind two strikers might be where he gets more success. And again, maybe with Ali as well, as he did against Liverpool, he probably played his best game for a couple of years. It's tricky. This is hugely reductive, but I generally don't love the idea of players in England who aren't very fast or very strong.
Yeah.
And he's kind of got neither. Like, not even quick. I mean, Declan Rice isn't necessarily quick, but he covers ground really quickly. Fast,
he gallops, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. All of a sudden, he's there, and then he's there. Yeah. I think in the last 5 minutes against West Ham in the FA Cup, he picked the ball up in defence, and then all of a sudden, he was in the inside left position after what seemed like 3 seconds. And I don't know, Gil just doesn't strike me as the kind of player that you can play quick, direct football with. And there's no fault of his own, but it's a scouting thing, really. I don't really see how someone looked at him and thought that's a fit for England.
It's, yeah, I don't know, but that seems to be sort of the... I don't know, I'm so torn between this, because it seems to be just a problem we've had quite a lot recently with the players we're signing, that it seems like there's a lot of thought behind them, and it seems like in so many ways a lot of these players should work out, but it's been quite a few duds lately. And I know we can sort of bemoan the managers we've had, pretty much a half dead Pochettino and then everyone on from that point until now, as to why, say, certain players like Ndombele might not have brought his best out, or may not be, I don't know, in a place mentally where he feels like he hasn't kind of just signed for the European Cup finalists, who then subsequently went and fell off a cliff. But we're seeing Gil. I mean, Emerson Royale, I've seen a lot of people at the moment say he's like dirge. And I really don't think he's a terrible player.
Agreed.
But nor do I think he's great, you know? And it's... I think he could be a better player, perhaps more in a central role, if he was to play the right side of that centre three. But that kind of his sort of... how limited he is in the final third in terms of delivering decent passes might mean that, you know, I mean, all the noises out of Tottenham seem to be that Conte doesn't really fancy him. You sort of say you agree. How do you feel about him overall?
I think he's been like fine. He certainly doesn't seem to be someone that deserves to have as much ire drawn towards him as other players. I mean, I do think there's a thing where Spurs put an unbelievable amount of pressure on their fullbacks or wingbacks to both be the highest in attack and the deepest in defence. I think someone like Trippier got a really rough end of that deal by having to do, you know, he had Eriksen playing inside right, and so he ended up having to be the winger and the fullback and just couldn't do it. And we were so spoilt with someone like Kyle Walker, who, you know, talk about galloping and eating up the ground quickly. I mean, there's never been a better example.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, when you have a barometer like that, you set your bar. You know, if when Kane leaves eventually, Kane will be the bar that we hold all strikers up to, unfortunately, and that'll be a thankless task for whoever comes in. But you're so used to seeing someone do something so well that even a 10% drop-off can look bad. And like, I thought Trippier was fine. No, better than fine. I thought he was a really good player for us.
I agree.
With the odd Rick. But he was never able to live up to that standard, and especially in a flagging team. He was one of the few that still had the legs to get up and down, but just couldn't do what was required.
I honestly wouldn't have minded Trippier back this window.
I agree.
Newcastle got him in there. I thought he would have been perfect for this system, but I kind of understand it, why people don't really want to go back in that thing. But I definitely agree with you on that. I think, I don't know, there is... It is tough, isn't it? Because I guess it's only now that the sort of dust is settling on the whole era that you probably really reflect on actually quite how good our team was under, you know, in the heady days of sort of, you know, 14-15, 15-16, 16-17, perhaps slightly after that as well. But we really were a very good team, and we were spoilt by the sort of quality we had there. And thus, yeah, it is going to be tough for anybody to live up to that. I mean, if you look at a team like Manchester United now, you know, they've still gone on, and it, probably in the past, the funny thing is, in the sort of worst decade they've had in, you know, since whenever, the probably 80s again, they've still won what, I think they've won a Europa League, have they won an FA Cup? I think they've won an FA Cup.
They won one in, was it 2016 against Palace? But I mean, that's not that, you know, still a fair bit ago.
But that sort of success is something we'd all sort of dine out on for quite a long time. And we do, really, if you look at kind of what we have won in our recent history. But for a team like United, it just isn't enough, is it? You know, and that's kind of what we are faced with a lot of our players. I mean, like you're saying there, Harry Kane, the thankless task of anyone following him. I mean, Harry Kane's thankless task is sort of trying to keep up with his own legacy at the moment, right? And it's a lot of what he... I do get it. I get why people are annoyed with him, but I think a lot of still what he brings to the team is massively kind of undervalued. And that's mm-hmm. not just... I don't think that's just a Spurs fan thing. I think we've both seen in summer a lot of those kind of like neutral galaxy brain type takes of like, Daniel Levy's an idiot. He should have taken Manchester City's whatever it was, 70 million for Harry Kane. And I mean, the reality is just... Why? You know, Tottenham can't be doing that. Unless, do you have any perspective on that at all, Adam? Actually?
Well, I mean, I'm sure the press would have been so praiseworthy of us if Harry Kane scored 50 goals for Man City and we finished 12th. Like, well, no, at least they did the right thing by selling Harry Kane, because we always get praised so widely for our ability to sell players. Yeah, I mean, that would have been a ringing endorsement all round.
I'm sure it would have been, especially for Daniel, because Daniel Levy, he's so loved by the press as well.
Of course, so, of course.
You know, they give him such fair treatment at all times. it's the elephant in the room, so let's get on to it. The booing of Tanguy Ndombele. So yesterday, you know, I was watching the game and I heard it start, and then it obviously became clear that it was growing as he was kind of walking off the pitch. And I don't know, I tweeted because I'd had a couple of beers and stuff, and it's Twitter, you know, you just say whatever's on your mind. Mm-hmm. I just said something like
that's what it's
know.
There for, exactly. And no one should apologise for that.
Exactly, it's just like, you know, oh, booing our players, fuck off, just kind of like a, oh, I can't be arsed for it, stop, you know, it's just a whatever, you know, let's just not start going down this route yet. We've got Antonio Conte, and he's a good manager. We're hopefully going to be doing good things. Let's not start fucking the doomsdaying at the moment. But then obviously that turns into, oh, you're a Tanguy Ndombele apologist and all this type of thing. I mean, for full disclosure, I'm absolutely fed up with the bloke. And I do think there's a lot of good there. But is it enough good to be a kind of a top-class Premier League footballer? I don't know. I don't think his attitude's great at all time. I mean, we've had obviously a big line of managers now who are not happy with him or not taken by him at all. So it just seems like right that he should go. I mean, I don't really like the whole idea of like policing what other fans do, and I probably in retrospect probably shouldn't have tweeted it, but you know, it's just, it is what it is, isn't it? I think, you know, people get very angry though. People straight away, and people often just assume immediately, well, you weren't there then, were you? You weren't there, were you? And it's like, it doesn't really matter if I was or not, but you know, you're allowed to have an opinion on something. I mean, you're not as asked about the booing. I mean, because I do get people's argument that how are fans supposed to let people know? Yeah, how are we supposed to let Daniel Levy know how we felt about the Nuno era? And you know, I kind of do feel it's different, but I understand there is a level of double standards to that. So, you know.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's probably not so different, and they probably both are extremely harsh on the individual that you're doing it to. Mm. And I think with Nuno, it was very unfortunate that it had to end that way, because by all accounts, he does seem like he was a nice guy or whatever. But you know, fans live for their football team. Like, we are unhealthily devoted to our team, and it's not maybe the best thing in the world. But you know, we've spent our lives like willing this team to win, and it's so exasperating when they're not, and especially when they're not in a way because what you think is their own flaws and their own faults. And I think the Nuno booing was probably the booing of the situation. I mean, I was apoplectic in June when he got the job, to be honest, and I think I tweeted out like, I'm just so sad, because sad, stupid word, but I'm so upset about this because it, for me, the next good Tottenham team is 2 years away. Maybe they've accelerated that. And I think with Ndombele, it is a shame for the individual. I mean, imagine being booed by 40,000 people. It would be one of the most horrific, you know, I'd never recover. But I guess with him, like, it's either going to mean that he leaves, in which case, shame it didn't work out, or by some maybe minor miracle, it motivates him to turn himself around. And, you know, it's the first time he's faced such scrutiny. I think that's probably a bit of a utopian view, but it's not a right thing to do, I suppose. And I guess the only defence is that how regularly have you ever seen Spurs fans do that? I mean, I've been going for nearly 30 years now, and I can't recall on more than, you know, fingers on one hand that ever happening to Spurs players. So there's a desperation to it that, whilst probably not defendable, We're not giving death threats to Xhaka every 3 months and asking for him to be the captain a month later, five times a year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I do get it. And I just, who's going to take him, mate? Who is going to take Ndombele? I think this is the question right now.
Hmm. 'Cause, I mean, but he's not that bad.
No, he's not. I don't think he is. But it's just obviously not. It's not working out, is it? And you kind of feel like we might be able to get some decent money for him, because he clearly just doesn't want to be there.
Hmm.
I think, but I mean, so you don't particularly think there's a massive urgency to biff him off?
I would very much like to see him sold, for the main reason that if someone's not in the plans and they're earning a lot of money and they are the focus of a lot of attention.
Mm.
I just don't think it's helpful from in the same way almost as when Danny Rose was there and he sort of stuck around for 18 months and he's always in the conversation, and there'll always be people that say Rose should be playing, but he's never going to play. And I almost don't think it's that helpful to have players around like that. So I think if Ndombele can be moved on, as much as the fact that you can save nearly £1 million a month on wages if they're able to reclaim that. And like, you know, let's try and be humane about it. You know, if a guy's going through a rough time in a bad situation, get him out of there and try and let him be happy somewhere else, I think.
Yeah, it's... Because I definitely... I mean, again, I'm not buying the kind of stuff that he is. He's all bad, that he's awful. A lot of it is, though, isn't it? It's a couple of years of frustration of how widely kind of lauded his talent was and how exciting a transfer it seemed to be. He seemed to be kind of like, this is sort of, at that time, the perfect signature for us to kind of really to kick on and make another kind of like charge towards being in those sort of like title races and things like that that we'd seen previously under Pochettino. But it's still, it just sort of hasn't transpired that way.
Do you remember his debut in the Audi Cup in Munich?
I don't know, actually. Was he any good? I remember him against Villa, that the Premier League debut, and he was decent in that. But
I remember him coming on, and maybe some people will remember this. He came on against, maybe it was Bayern Munich or Juventus, or whoever he played in that competition, and my dad called and was like, oh, how do you play? He's like, yeah, languid. Looks pretty languid, which is what you try and probably the adjective that you use for someone that clearly can't run, but you're trying to defend them as much as possible because you've pinned all your hopes in this £65 yeah. million pound signing. And probably Berbatov's the only player to ever actually be okay with being languid. And ultimately, I don't know, just that the profiling of Ndombele just seems all wrong. And I was talking to some mates earlier today that it's so bizarre that Pochettino would have rejected someone like Tielemans, who, if you look at his Premier League career, since joining Leicester, would have been like the perfect Dembele replacement for us. But then, by all accounts, Ndombele was the one that he wanted. And it just doesn't make any sense because, you know, you could watch him for 90 minutes or 60 if you're lucky and just think, this guy just isn't right for this, is he?
Pochettino's legendary grasp on yeah. new signings, isn't it? Love him as I do, but you know, it's...
Well, we had that one back Poch summer and we ended up selling Trippier for a third of his value and signing Ndombele and Lo Celso. So maybe that hashtag should be buried forever, even if he comes back.
Yeah. Would you have him back?
Yeah, he's daddy.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? I've never really known how you fully were on, how fully sort of in on Poch. Obviously, everyone loved him to a degree, but like how much there was there or not.
Well, I mean, I'm 34, so he would have joined when I was 26, 27, I suppose. Yeah. And I mean, that those are kind of really formative years. You probably have periods as a football fan that shape how your fandom goes. And I think those years, you know, 25 to 30, where you probably are able to go to more games and don't have quite as many responsibilities as going on, they're so formative for you that, you know, if we could have just had like a day in the sun with a bit of silver to show for it, it would have been just the most perfect half decade you could ever wish to imagine.
I can't go back there again.
I know. I'm sorry to
honestly,
even bring it
literally
up.
Literally nearly every single podcast I bring up the Champions League final. You know, it's still so bizarre that we didn't get anything over the line, though, isn't it? That Pochettino team. Because we're there now. We're doing it now. So we might as well talk about it. Because
clear your diaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go.
I still can't believe it. And, I mean, this surely... Because, I mean, he's sort of referenced it many times. This must be... It must be weighing on Conte's mind, the fact that we have to get something over the line. And that's why I wasn't even that against the... I know most people hated the Europa Conference League, but I just sort of saw it as like, we can actually, and we should, just piss this competition. We really should. It is a glorified Audi Cup, you know? Like, it's something that we should win, and obviously that didn't work out. I mean, well, it remains to be seen, actually. You know, it's still potentially... we've still got grounds to appeal it, so we've still got time.
Imagine how that would annoy people if we got in through the courts and then won it. you'd rather have that than the Champions League, let's be honest.
Probably, yeah. Especially if we still went on to beat Roma in the final as well.
Yeah, like,
that
absolutely.
That would be pretty tidy. But, I mean, our chances of silverware this year, because, I mean, Brighton next round, I mean, we don't need to worry about that. But, obviously, the nasty fixture in our headlights now is Chelsea. I mean, Are you at all hopeful?
I mean, as we were saying last Wednesday, I went to that Spurs-Real Madrid game thinking, if we can get one before 20 and then be 2-0 up at half-time, I'm talking about when we were 4-0 down going into the second leg under Harry Redknapp. So 2-0 is, you know, child's play in comparison to that, especially with no away goals. But you know what will happen. We'll probably score after about half an hour, miss three absolute sitters, and then, like, Timo Werner will spring the offside trap on the 80th minute and send us all home in tears again, as always seems to happen against Chelsea in these semi-finals. But look, we really shat the bed last week, because I think even a performance of competence would have given us at worst a 1-0 defeat. But you're asking a lot to spend half of a semi-final playing that badly and come out of it going through.
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange one, wasn't it? Because I completely take on board, and obviously you have to take on board the fact that Chelsea they're a powerhouse, much as we hate to admit it. And the money they've spent assembling their side is significant. And they've just, they've obviously just won the European Cup, and we never win at fucking Stamford Bridge anyway. But there was still something quite disappointing about our lack of, I don't know, again, I get it, it's all the proper football mannisms, right? It's the lack of kind of fight and the lack of kind of tenacity about any of our play. And it does just feel like we still kind of shrink in these games. But again, like I sort of refer back to what you were saying at the top, Conte's not been here long, and it's a work in progress, right? We are, we have to build forwards from this. And I mean, I honestly don't think we learn a lot from playing teams like Chelsea and Liverpool really at the moment, in a sort of team that is being rebuilt, because you'd expect we're going to be signing at least a couple of players this January. I don't think there's going to be a wholesale, a massive amount in, but all the noises and everything would suggest that whether it's going to be Adama Traore or someone like that coming in, we do seem to need a couple of bodies. I mean, one of the ones I really want, mate, I just want even if it's like a 35-year-old, whatever, just a body, some old Italian striker. We just need somebody. Like, we need another option up there. I mean, is Llorente still kicking about? Can we bring him back? Like,
must be. He must be in immaculate shape, regardless of what he does.
He was somebody I always, like we're talking about with Trippier, I always felt he was off-derided in his time with us, and I thought he was all right for the most part. You know, when he was called upon, he usually did an all right job. Mm-hmm. But sack him off. I mean, do you? It's Tottenham Chelsea, right? We've got. I mean, I get that the temptation is there for people to just say, just sack it off and concentrate on the league. We've got Arsenal at the weekend. We need to be fresh, but we've got to take it to Chelsea, right? In a cup semi final, and bring it, basically in terms of bringing our best players to the fore.
Yeah, 100%. As much as it's good for these players to play against the best teams together, they wouldn't have played much on Sunday. There's 5 days until the Arsenal game after this one, give or take. So, yeah, I mean, they owe it to themselves. They have to start winning big games. And even if you win 2-1 and you leave it all out there, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, and you'd hope as well this could be a chance for Harry Kane to kind of get this, because he's kind of starting to carry this tag now that he disappears in these big important games. And it could be, let's be honest, it'd be a lovely opportunity for him to prove people otherwise on that front. I don't know, mate. I find it quite almost like I'd go as far as to say like quite a bipolar place with Tottenham, because I will go into it some weeks just thinking like, we're all right, we got Conte in charge and we're going to sign a couple of players and he'll improve a few of the players that we've got here. And then other times I'm still just like, Christ, he's going to leave, he's going to get sort of fed up that we're not going to be able to develop enough players quickly enough. We're not going to be able to shift enough of the players quickly enough that we maybe need to. And we don't, contrary to the kind of like the popular belief that we should be sort of spending in sort of tandem with teams like Manchester City and Chelsea. We don't have that spending power, and we do actually, we have now for the past couple of years spent a lot of money, which doesn't kind of play well into the narrative around sort of the club and how we do spend money. But I'm still just not sure. I'm not really sure what I want from this season, to be honest, other than, you know, obviously for Tottenham to win something and be successful and get into the top four. So I suppose that is what I want from this season. But I mean, what does sort of represent success to you at the moment, mate, for Tottenham? Because I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Does it feel to you like we're still kind of in this transition, really, that we're somewhere between two places?
Well, I mean, imagine after that West Ham game. Obviously, the United game was a complete catastrophe, but the week before we lost to West Ham, didn't we, in Nuno's penultimate league game. And imagine even saying then that, come March, April, you'd be well within the race for the top four. You wouldn't have even allowed yourself to entertain the thought. And I am trying to retain that when I think about what do I want for the rest of the season, because there does need to be a little bit of realism of where we were. And the job of the manager will be, I mean, if we get in the top four this year, then it will be the greatest managed, not a word, but you know what I'm trying to say, season that we've ever had. Like, if he's able to turn what we had into that, it would be incredible. And as I say, if it just wasn't for those pricks down the road, I could just sort of allow myself to think, right, August 2022, we'll be ready. Which I think is what we should aspire to. Because it has to be a slightly longer term thought. I mean, the manager said that himself, and he should be the one, if anything, that's trying to, you know, big people up for now. So there is part of me that thinks we should just look to be good in August 2022. But if we get to a stage where we can play one game a week, we do have a good first 11, which is studded with some fantastic players. And as a result, we can win the majority of games that we play in. And if you win the games you should win, you know, it's not that hard to get in the top four, as ridiculous as it sounds. You just need to win you just can't lose to Palace away. And we've done that now, so you've made up with beating Man City at home. Like, you have to go and beat Burnley away, Brighton away, Leicester away if you can. And if you pick up, as daft as it sounds, you pick up the points that you should pick up, you'll find yourself there or thereabouts almost by default.
Yeah, it's horrible to see, kind of, like you're saying, like you could enjoy it more if Arsenal weren't sniffing around, but not only them, West Ham as well, who could...
I've never cared about West Ham for some reason, but no, go on, sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all, mate. I mean, speak freely. I know what you mean. I think now that they're kind of getting better, though, I'm definitely feeling it more, and I think it's more just because of how, I don't know, just unpleasant a club I think they are, really, and how they've often been. I can't really stand the idea of them getting there, but maybe we should get used to it. I don't know. I think United as well, they're not out of it. I know people want to sort of talk about Wreck-It Ralph and everything like that with Rangnick in charge, but you know, they've got a squad that should be doing a lot better than it is, albeit it seems to be chaos behind the scenes there. They're all sort of revolting against Cristiano Ronaldo now, was the last kind of thing I was reading about what they're up to. So it is there for the taking for Spurs, isn't it? And I want to be back in it, you know, the Champions League. I loved it. I loved every second of it when we were in there, and I always have done. And I think it potentially is quite easy to take for granted at times. You know, sometimes when you get the kind of in the group stages and you get whatever, a few of the sort of the lesser Champions League sides, but you should just enjoy every second of that, because that's given us, I'd probably say, as Spurs fans, because I'm a similar age, I'm 36, and I would say in our lifetimes, you know, be it the Redknapp sort of year or the Pochettino years as well in the Champions League, it's some of my best memories of Tottenham, really, being in the Champions League. And it would just be nice to get back there, obviously. So, mate, anything else, any burning sort of desires, anything that you want to get off your chest, Tottenham related or otherwise? You know, it's a free platform here. I'm sure you've listened before.
Yeah, I mean, I probably have been accused of being quite a straw man for Daniel Levy in the past. And I think my argument has always been that if you get to that many cup finals and that many semi-finals, the construction of the squad can't be that bad. Because you don't get into those by luck, and unfortunately, we've not been able to get over the line in those big games, which is where we have lacked maybe the bounce of the ball, a bit of experience, or whatever. But I do think that when people are going bananas now about, you know, Conte's going to leave this month if we don't spend any money. Again, maybe this is because I'm a Levy fan, in inverted commas, whatever that even means. I just don't think he's a prick, which is probably would put me on the, you know, top 10% of Spurs fans in terms of how people view him. I don't think he's stupid enough to hire Antonio Conte and expect the way that things have gone to remain the status quo. Quite aside from the fact that, as you say, we've spent a lot of money in the last 3 years, just spent it badly, unfortunately. So I am quite calm about this idea that, you know, they're just going to let Conte down, because I think if they did let Conte down and if Conte wasn't able to win at Spurs because of the conditions in place from upstairs, I think that would be the end of a lot of fans our age in being able to relate to what Enoch are trying to do. And I think a lot of us would step away.
Yeah, because it's funny, isn't it? Because I think we've all, a lot of us in varying degrees, have had sort of wobbles with Levy and the stewardship of the club and everything. I mean, certain, I think at pinch points, I think the ones where I've sort of most lost my arse was the kind of like Nelson and Saha time. And then, probably, you know, I know we were building a stadium, but still a couple of windows without investment. Mm-hmm. I probably was starting to get a bit pissed off at that point. But I think I still think most people I speak to, when you really sort of break it down, it's undeniable the job that Levy has done at Tottenham. I mean, the funny thing is, like, we're talking about at the moment, as you say, being annoyed that we haven't won a Champions League final or we haven't won a Premier League and such. But before he came in, you know, this wasn't even... I've spoken about it at length on here many times, in that my experience as a Tottenham fan growing up, I would have just dreamed of us being even in the Champions League. You know, just it seemed something that would be so...
It wasn't for us.
No, it was never going to happen, in the same way that, you know, I mean, it's hard now because we've shifted the bar up so much, but it would almost be similar to sort of saying now that, you know, Tottenham could go on a winning streak and sort of catch up maybe with the likes of United, Liverpool and everything like that in terms of silverware or something like that. You know, to me, that just seems something that's completely alien, and it won't ever happen. But then you don't know what happens in 30, 40 years' time. It's a long time, you know. Spurs could have won a lot of stuff in that time. So I sort of digress a bit there. But Daniel Levy, he's got a lot of credit in the bank at the moment, right? Like, he acted decisively. Like, he sacked... He had a bit of him and Paratici. I mean, it's hard to know how much it's split between the two of them now in terms of who's making the calls in the first place. But, you know, we had that sort of farcical managerial search in the summer. We brought in Nuno Espirito Santo, and he has acted... I don't think you can say anything other than Daniel Levy has acted decisively and in the best interests of the club. I mean, people can speculate on that all they want to, you know, oh, he's only doing that because of the brand, it's better for the brand, and they want to, whatever, it doesn't matter. The net good of this is that Nuno Espirito Santo wasn't working. He's hired, what, one of the top five managers in world football. So this idea, yeah, I agree with you, this idea that, like, he's not, as much as people love to sort of continue to say this, like, he's stupid or something, I mean, he quite obviously isn't, is he? So, I mean, he's not going to be bringing in somebody like Antonio Conte and not backing him. My only worry is that, like, you know, if we do get into, again, like, you know, any sort of protracted deals around players that Antonio Conte particularly wants, or if, I mean, the one thing I will say about Conte that I've noticed from his press conferences is that we all sort of obviously knew this anecdotally, but he is he's quite dramatic, isn't he? I think, and you can see why he has sort of flounced from pretty much every club that he has managed when he's had sort of blips in the road. And I think that will always concern me at Spurs with him. That, you know, you can sit down in meetings and be as sort of grown up as you like in terms of about the fact that, yeah, we don't have the spending power of Chelsea and Manchester City, but he looked personally quite embarrassed the other night at Stamford Bridge, you know, and you can understand it. He's going back to his old stomping ground, the club that he sort of left pretty acrimoniously. But I do worry if, like, you know, the project, if you like, or whatever. Because, I mean, let's not forget, he's not really a project manager, is he? But if the project doesn't sort of take off with the sort of speed or in a way in which he'd hope it would, if he is going to sort of be a manager, it goes. But I don't know. You can't really live your life in fear like that, can you?
No. Yeah. And also, none of it has helped. You know, there's a lot of really good that comes from social media, and certainly sports social media. You meet some fantastic people off the back of it, but just the transfer discourse, it just so damaging to teams that can't afford to just spend whatever they want, because you've only got to get one idiot like Romano tweeting about, you know, Spurs aren't sure if they want to sign this player, and then there's 15,000 quote retweets about how there's no ambition at the club, and it may not even be a deal that's happening, but you start, you know, getting it into people's heads that this is that and that's that, and it just changes how people view so many things. I mean, not to go uber football man and, you know, wish you could wake up and read about the transfers in the tomorrow's papers, but you do feel like we're past the point of no return, where there's just no rationality about transfers now, and for some people the season almost becomes July to September and January, as opposed to what's happened in the actual games. And I think that has actually damaged my enjoyment of football quite a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you, because it's become ridiculous, hasn't it? In terms of, like, you've even seen, like, after the sort of the past couple of years they've had, there were a lot of Liverpool fans booming off because they hadn't dropped whatever 150 mil on how many players. And I'm not sort of doing this in a way of just being like, oh, that's what Liverpool are like. I just, like you say, I think it's an indictment on kind of modern fans, and at least the way modern football is now, that there is this whole fanfare, isn't there? There is this kind of, like, idea that to be successful, you have to spend loads and loads and loads of money on massive players. I think a lot of it, I mean, this is definitely me going full old man shouts at cloud type stuff, but a lot of it's like the gamification of football, isn't it? With FIFA Ultimate Team and all that type of thing, the way in which it's the shiny new thing, isn't it? And that's what we've always got to have. But it is funny in so much as the sort of the greatest success Tottenham have had probably in the past, well, in a lot of our history since we at least were winning stuff in the 80s again, is from teams that were assembled as a mixture of youth teams and smart acquisitions, aren't they? Which, you know, people are always going to argue that we didn't actually win anything during that time, but at the same time, you know, we had a good laugh, didn't we? And that's, I think, I'm sort of that school of thought that as much as it would be nice to win something, it doesn't mean that the experience is completely meaningless otherwise, you know, because that Champions League run was probably the best time of my life, you know.
I mean, I was lucky enough to be in Barcelona, Dortmund and Amsterdam for those three games in that run, and there's nothing that I would swap, you know, certainly Amsterdam for anything. I mean, maybe the 84 Cup final, which in those videos does look amazing, like winning a European trophy at White Hart Lane. That's the one thing I'm really jealous of both my parents that they were at, that I wasn't. But outside of that, I don't think there's a game in Spurs' history that I would swap that Amsterdam for. And we've won 8 FA Cups.
Exactly. I mean, that for Spurs, that's as close to like an Aguero moment as we're going to get, right? Well, I mean, well, we don't know. We don't know what the future holds, but for this point in time anyway, it seems unimaginable. Seems unimaginable until it happens, mate. That's
indeed.
That's the thing. But yeah, thanks, sir. I hope that's, you know,
We've covered it all. We've settled all hash.
Yeah, I think so, mate. I think so. It's been good to have you on though, mate. We'll have to get you on again, actually.
Anytime.
Yeah, it's been good. You got a good microphone as well, mate. It sends your dulcet tone. If you don't mind me saying, like, you've got an incredible voice, Adam. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, dulcet tones, and it's, I don't know, audio caramel. Should we put it that way?
I'm an event caterer by trade, and given that entire industry has gone completely up the shits, maybe professional podcasting with my tones, if anyone would ever pay me to listen to me talk about complete rubbish, which is never going to happen now that the words come out of my mouth. So, you know, I'm going to have to backtrack immediately, but what a great shame.
You could still do voiceovers. You don't know.
That's true.
All right, well, you can follow Adam at Adam D. Nathan. on Twitter. Is there anything else you want to plug whatever you want, mate? Go on, now's the time.
No, nothing to plug. I mean, certainly wouldn't plug my own Twitter feed if you've got any, don't want to waste your own time reading my ramblings, but it'd be a pleasure to engage with anyone that fancies it.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.